Recording is in progress. I am John Ween, attorney and legal instructor with Blue to Gold Law Enforcement Training, coming to you today with officers from across the nation for airport and border searches. So here we go. First things first, guys. You know, we're attorneys, and we wouldn't be attorneys if we didn't have disclaimers. So I'm going to throw some disclaimers out there for you. Your laws and your SOPs may be more restrictive. Understand, this is a federal nationwide presentation. I'm not going 50 state specific on this bad boy. So if you're in one of my outlier states, right, like Oregon, I saw Oregon here, New York, I saw New York here, Washington, New Mexico, okay, New Jersey, these are my outlier states, far more restrictive under the state constitution than the federal constitution. So you have to know your own individual laws as well as your own individual policies. Federal standard, state standard, and then the more restrictive policies. If you have any doubts, push up the chain. You have a chain of command for a reason. Rely on that chain of command. Push the information up if you have the time and the opportunity. Rely on the direction, the leadership of those in leadership positions above you. And then finally, this course is legal education, not legal advice. I'm an attorney. I'm not your attorney. I'm not telling you what to do in any given situation. I am telling you what the law says. Our agenda for today, pretty simple, guys. One and two. Number one, airport searches. Number two, border searches. Let's get into it. First up, airport searches. Before we embark on this, guys, here's what I want you to do. I want you to understand, every time we teach a class, we talk about the three golden rules, right? Rule number one is articulate. Rule number two is the more serious the crime, the more reasonable your actions are likely to be viewed. In every Fourth Amendment analysis, the court will engage in a balancing test, weighing the governmental or societal interest against the infringement on the individual's rights. Where there is a significant governmental or societal interest in preventing the type of crime that you are investigating, well, then the court will be understanding and gracious of a significant infringement on an individual's rights. Conversely, where there is a minimal or non-existent governmental or societal interest in preventing the type of crime you are investigating, the court will not be understanding, gracious, or magnanimous about a significant interference with an individual's rights. And so what we're talking about here today, we have to keep in mind, we're talking about border security, okay? And so whatever else, however else you may feel about that word, right? There is a significant governmental interest in securing our nation's borders. There is also a significant governmental interest in securing state borders. So keep that in mind as we're talking about that today, right? Every Fourth Amendment analysis, the court engages in a balancing test. And here we're talking about a significant governmental interest in securing borders. Keep that in mind. All right, airport searches. Let's talk about those security checkpoints that everybody loves, right? Everybody loves. You go up to that TSA checkpoint and you know what's going to happen. Prepare yourself. With regard to security checkpoints, let's talk about identification. We're going to factor in that point of no exit and then searches at security checkpoints. So asking for identification at those security checkpoints. The question is asking for a passenger's ID a search under the Fourth Amendment? The answer is no, right? Asking for a passenger's ID at a security checkpoint is not a search under the Fourth Amendment. Refusal to provide that ID, well, what can that result in? That can result in denial of the board. Well, great. You can't go any farther past this point. Or additional screening, right? Everybody loves the additional screening. You refuse to identify yourself. Chances are you're going to get that expanded screening. Gilmore versus Gonzalez is your case on point here. Ninth Circuit out of 2006 case. In this case, passenger claimed that the TSA ID policy was unconstitutional. Why? Because it impeded his right to travel. It was a Fourth Amendment search, and the more intrusive screening he was subjected to was unreasonable. So there's his argument. These are the factors. He's taking the shotgun approach to this, to this argument. It impeded his right to travel. What do you guys think about that, right? I know some of you guys out there, you've contacted your sovereign citizens, right? And they're saying, I'm not driving, I'm traveling, I'm an interstate traveler. Yeah, right? Is the right to travel A constitutionally guaranteed right? I don't remember that one, right? Yeah, I don't remember that one in the Constitution. Ultimately, Ninth Circuit here's held the ID request was not a search. There is no right to travel by air. Additional screening is a reasonable Fourth Amendment search. Keep in mind, governmental interest, infringement on the individual's rights. Okay. And Michael, right? He made reference to September 11th, right? That's right. Governmental interest in this type of screening? Absolutely. Gilmore does not possess a fundamental right to travel by airplane, even though it is the most convenient mode of travel for him. Moreover, the identification policy's burden is not unreasonable. The identification policy requires that airline passengers either present identification or be subjected to a more extensive search. The more extensive search is similar to searches that we have determined were reasonable and consistent with a full recognition of appellant's constitutional right to travel. There you go. If the passenger refuses to provide ID or be subjected to additional selectee screening, can he turn around and leave? What do you guys think? Keep in mind, where are we right here, right? Where are we right here? We are at the security checkpoint, right? So at this point, it appears the passenger can make the choice and leave. Why? Because the Ninth Circuit here recognized Gilmore was free to decline both options and use a different mode of transportation, like his own 2 feet. In sum, by requiring Gilmore to comply with the identification policy, defendants did not violate his right to travel. If a passenger refuses to provide ID or submit to additional screening, it's likely they can turn around and leave. However, can you, as a law enforcement officer under these circumstances, articulate reasonable suspicion to believe the person is, was, or is about to be engaged in some kind of general criminal activity, right? That's specific, articulable facts, more than a mere hunch. If you've got that, if you've met that standard, if you've met that reasonable suspicion standard where you say, yes, there is a moderate chance based on this, 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 and this, that this guy is, was, or is about to be engaged in some kind of general criminal activity, well, then you can detain that person for a reasonable amount of time. A reasonable amount of time to either confirm your suspicions, which equals arrest, or dispel your suspicions, at which point the person needs to be released immediately, or it needs to be turned into a consensual encounter. Right? All right. However, it appears that once they provide their ID, they are submitting to the security procedure and TSA can finish the process. So you request the ID. They say, you know what? No, I don't want to do this. I don't want to give you ID. I don't want to be identified. And they turn around and leave. And now, guys, I mean, this is 2006, right? I mean, modern day, is anybody not aware of what's going to happen to them when they're walking into that airport, right? You start walking up to that screening, you know, man, you know it's going to get real heavy real quick. So let's talk about the point of no exit, right? The point of no return. Once the passenger has submitted himself to the screening process, he cannot leave before the screening process has been completed. So once it starts, right? Once you roll the dice, you're in it for the duration. Okay? So the start of screening. At the start of screening, there's going to be some kind of notice. Usually you'll see signs along the line of this. All persons and property may be subject to additional screening beyond this point, right? All persons and property may be subject to additional screening beyond this point. Manual says, I understand the ID part, but now they have like biometrics where they scan your face and et cetera. Can we decline that? So, Manuel, if you've noticed when it comes to TSA, right? Before you enter the queue, right? Before you enter the line, you see this sign. This sign is posted at the beginning of the lines. So once you start entering that roped off area, now you've seen this sign. Now you are in this realm. You say biometrics, scan your face, and things like that. When you go up to TSA now, they take a picture of you, right? They compare it automatically to your identification. Do you have the option to decline that? You do. You can tell them, I don't want my picture taken and I don't want it recorded. And then you are, guess what? Subjected to additional screening. Right? Okay. So all persons and property may be subject to additional screening beyond this point. Once you pass this sign, arguably you are in it to win it, baby. This is the point of no exit. allowing passengers to leave would allow them to shop around for lax security. So what we don't want is we don't want people going up and testing for points of weakness, right? Poke, 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 poke until I find that point of weakness to exploit. So once I get into that queue, right? Once I get into that line with the all the uprights and the banisters, I'm past this sign, okay? You're in it, you're in it, you're in it to win it, baby, okay? A passenger passed through the magnetometer with a fanny pack on. Although there was no alert, the screener told him to take off the pack for inspection. He refused and left. A cop later stopped him and searched the pack, finding magic mushrooms. Now, this is Colorado, right? So, you know, this is 1991. Nowadays, you know, the cop would probably be like, here, I'll take one too, because everybody's rolling on magic mushrooms in Colorado in 2024, right? That's the place to be. Why go to Colorado if you're not going to be whacked out of your mind on psilocybin? That's what I always say. I digress. What do you guys think? Are we good here? Okay. He says, hey, take off your fanny pack. Give that bad boy to me. He refuses. He leaves. Cop later stops him, search the pack, finds magic mushrooms. And the court says this search was upheld as reasonable, even though he had already left the security area. And Richard's throwing in that, you know, early 1990s Mario Brothers mushroom. Right? That was the noise of getting... Anyway, you guys know what I'm talking about. Some of you were alive back then. We conclude that the warrantless search under the circumstances present here was pursuant to a legitimate regulatory program designed to secure the safety of persons and property in air commerce and did not violate either the federal or state constitutional prescription against an unreasonable search or seizure. Okay. And then finally, let's talk about searches. Searches at the security checkpoints. Once admitted into the screening process, the search is not based on consent, but rather the administrative search doctrine, i.e., the special needs doctrine. Okay. So the administrative search doctrine tells us you are conducting a search for a non-criminal investigatory purpose, and it's reasonable in its scope and execution. So you must have notice, must be minimally intrusive. First up, notice. Yeah. So we have to put the person on notice. Notice means the passenger voluntarily knew he was going through a screening process. Are there signs ad nauseum? Yes, there are. United States versus Edwards out of the Second Circuit. In this case, right? A sign at the airport security checkpoint said passengers and baggage subject to search. After drugs were found, the passenger argued she was not informed of her right to withdraw consent. And so this is a 1974 case, right? Interesting case. Back then, we're getting into this like consent argument where she says, hey, this wasn't valid consent. This wasn't a valid search because you never told me. I was not informed of my right to withdraw consent. Consent is only needed to enter the secure area, not for the search. So once you are on notice, once you pass that sign, once you know what's going on, you have consented, and now we're no longer in the area of consent. Consent is no longer controlling once you walk past that point. The point is rather that in order to bring itself within the test of reasonableness applicable to airport searches, the government must give the citizen fair warning before he enters the area of search that he is at liberty to proceed no further. Consent doesn't work because consent may be revoked at any time. Also, since it's not express consent, it would have to fall under implied consent. But there is no free choice, right? You don't have the option. It's not freely and voluntarily given. Indeed, no. You are on notice, and that search is going to happen. A passenger with no ID did not set off the magnetometer. Still, since he had no ID, a secondary screening was performed. The passenger demanded to leave the airport, but was refused. The second screening revealed meth. The passenger's revocation of consent is not required to complete the screening process, right? And so again, we're not in the realm of consent. Your consent gets you into that area. Once you're in that area, it's no longer a matter of consent. The constitutionality of an airport screening search, however, does not depend on consent, and requiring that a potential passenger be allowed to revoke consent to an ongoing airport security search makes little sense in a post-9/11 world. Such a rule would afford terrorists multiple opportunities to attempt to penetrate airport security by electing not to fly on the cusp of detection until a vulnerable portal is found. This rule would also allow terrorists a low-cost method of detecting systematic vulnerabilities in airport security, knowledge that could be extremely valuable in planning future attacks, right? And so, again, what are we talking about here? We're talking about the governmental or societal interest, which is extremely, extremely high. All right. This search must be minimally intrusive. Courts want suspicionless searches to be performed in the least intrusive manner. This requirement is usually determined by command staff, and they are required to research the least intrusive means. Some technologies do cause concern. So if you guys are acting within keeping with your policy, right? If you are working border, if you are working TSA checkpoints, if you are dictated by policy how to do that, the administration is the one required to dictate what the least intrusive means to accomplish the goals set out would be, right? And do some technologies cause concern? Absolutely, right? Absolutely, they do. I remember when this thing came out, right? Everybody was like, oh my gosh, you're taking pictures of my, you know, private areas, right? And, you got your laser scanners and the end of privacy, right? Everybody who's seen Total Recall knows that's exactly what's happening here, right? Arnold runs past that scanner, the firearm's in there, it starts blinking red. Heck yeah, right? The future is now, baby. Pretty soon, we're going to be populating Mars. I cannot wait, okay? 2 weeks. 2 weeks. So what did we do when we started utilizing this, right? There was a lot of heartache. There was a lot of concern. And so what did we do to lessen the intrusion? Well, the software distorts the images, right? We're not seeing every nook and cranny. We're not seeing the areola, whatever, okay? The viewer is remotely located. You guys notice this? The person who is actually looking at that scanner is not actually also there staring at you. They cannot see the person screened. They cannot save or print images, right? These images, I'm like, oh yeah, here's a hottie. Let me print this one out. And the images are automatically purged. And we talked earlier about that, going up and having your face scanned and compared, I'm assuming through AI, right, to your passport or through your identification, you're actually on notice. It says, the images automatically deleted after, confirmation is made and at no point will be saved beyond 24 hours, blah, 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 right? Sure. Like, I believe the federal government. Absolutely. I have no doubt that they do not save those images forever. Just like I believe there is no national registry for firearms. But I digress. Number three, lack of discretion, right? Lack of discretion. Airport checkpoint searches don't require RS or PC. Therefore, allowing screeners to independently select people for additional searches opens the door to discrimination and abuse. So in order to be keeping with this administrative search, we don't want the person doing the screener, we don't want the screener to have discretion, right? Since all travelers submit to security screening, this factor is not highly litigated today, okay? This is more of an issue when we're talking about, going through that checkpoint and they're like, yeah, this car, right? Versus, no, every third car we're going to check without RS or PC, right? But now we all know. We all know in modern society, we're all assuming the position and getting scanned. And I don't know what it is, but those TSA guys, man, right? They always tell me, your crotch showed up red. And I'm like, every time? And they're like, yep, every time. I don't know. Whatever. I travel a lot. I think maybe I'm on some lists. I don't know. If anybody up from TSA is on here and can weigh in on this, right? They'd be like, can you check and see? Am I on the always frisk list? A passenger was randomly selected for additional screening, which revealed 4 bricks of cocaine taped to his body. The passenger argued the additional screening must be based on RS or PC. And the court said the additional screening was lawful because it was minimally intrusive and random. Yep. Number four, there has to be a compelling need. All right. There has to be a compelling need. Administrative searches must be motivated by air safety, not general criminal investigations. Okay. That's what we talked about, right? We said that is one of the administrative search requirements, is it's not for a specific criminal investigatory purpose, but rather, what are we motivated by? We're motivated by the significant governmental interest of maintaining safety in our airplanes, right? City of Indianapolis versus Edmond. In this case, police set up a vehicle checkpoint and they ran a drug dog around each car, right? Ooh, around each car. Checkpoints for general crime control are prohibited, but the court said that airport checkpoints were permissible for public safety. All right. Well, yeah, Amanda, I hope that goes through. I hope that goes through. That's scary stuff. All right. So the security checkpoint purpose. Okay. Why are we doing this? We want to prevent people from bringing weapons through secured areas. We want to, you know, avoid introduction of dangerous items. Somebody mentioned the shoe bomber earlier, right? We want to keep out explosives. As long as the search is motivated by air safety, plain view applies. If motivation was for another purpose, then regular Fourth Amendment rules apply. Police paid an X-ray operator a $250 bonus whenever he discovered contraband, i.e. drugs, money, etc. in carry-on luggage. I don't know about you guys, but I'm thinking maybe we should implement this policy among patrol officers, right? I'm just saying, hey, Sarge, what do you think? Anytime I pull narcotics out of a vehicle, maybe a little extra $250 bonus in my stocking at Christmas. What do you guys think? Is this general air safety, or is there some kind of an ulterior motive here? Yeah, right? A financial motive. This ulterior motive was improper, and therefore the evidence was suppressed. Right? See, Lonnie's like, would you be highly motivated, Lonnie? I would too, man, right? Maybe a little too motivated. Yeah. We cannot fault law enforcement officials for focusing on airport security searches as a source of information regarding criminal activities. The task they face is enormous and important, a sieve through which pass the contents of billions of satchels, purses, briefcases, and pockets will naturally strain out much that is of interest to law enforcement. But it is the very ubiquitousness of airport security checks that calls for the greatest vigilance on our part. Because these checks touch the lives of so many, because they have become such an accepted part of our existence, they are capable of great abuse. Absolutely. Liberty, the freedom from unwarranted intrusion by government, is as easily lost through insistent nibbles by government officials who seek to do their jobs too well as by those whose purpose is to oppress. The piranha can be as deadly as the shark. Beautiful, right? Beautiful. The death by a thousand cuts, right? Okay. Yes. Yeah, I like where this is going. United States versus $557,933.89 in U.S. funds, right? A screener opened a briefcase and saw $500,000 in small denomination money orders without payee or payor information. Ellie was called over to investigate money laundering. Seems like there might be something going on here. As long as you can articulate why you have over $500,000 in small denomination money orders in this briefcase, I'm sure there's a reasonable explanation. And the court said plain view justified the seizure of the money orders and the involvement of law enforcement was reasonable. Okay. So there's your airport searches, guys. Let's talk about border searches. Okay. Border searches, routine searches at the border. Border searches are one of the oldest governmental searches and don't require any burden of proof. Unlike airport searches, border agents can have a general criminal investigatory motive as long as the crime is related to border security. And really, there are a whole lot of crimes related to border security. Agreed? A whole lot of crimes. Border searches, then, from before the adoption of the Fourth Amendment, have been considered to be reasonable by the single fact that the person or item in question had entered into our country from outside. There has never been any additional requirement that the reasonableness of a border search depended on the existence of probable cause. This long-standing recognition that searches at our borders without probable cause and without a warrant are nonetheless reasonable, as a history as old as the Fourth Amendment itself. All right? Border agents removed gas tank and found 37 kilograms of marijuana. Agents did not have RS or PC. No RS, no PC. We pulled the gas tank off this car. Man, that seems like it's intrusive. Where are we weighing, guys? Governmental or societal interest weighed against the infringement on the individual's rights? What's the governmental or societal interest here? Absolutely huge. And the court said this was considered a routine border search. Border searches apply to entries and exits. The fundamental principles of national sovereignty that are the basis for the border search exception, we have explained, apply equally to government efforts to protect and monitor exports from the country, as they do to efforts to control imports. Okay? Now, non-routine searches. If we have a border agent, right? If we have somebody at the border and we are doing a non-routine search, what are the parameters there? Non-routine border searches are those that invade legitimacy, privacy interests, or damage property. If you're going to start damaging property, they require reasonable suspicion. Under the border search doctrine, government agents may conduct a routine search at the international border or its functional equivalent without probable cause, a warrant, or any suspicion to justify the search. Routine searches are generally classified as those which do not seriously invade a traveler's privacy. A stop and search that is not routine requires a reasonable suspicion of wrongdoing to pass constitutional muster. So, for these non-routine searches to apply, it has to occur at the border or the functional equivalent. Okay? Reasonable suspicion is the legal standard that must be met, and it has to be a targeted search. United States versus Roberts out of the Fifth Circuit, right? Fifth Circuit gives us this direction here. Border agents had reasonable suspicion that a passenger leaving the country had evidence of a firearm conspiracy on his phone. A warrantless off-site forensic analysis was conducted 30 days later. We seize it at the border. We have at least reasonable suspicion, right, that there is a firearm conspiracy on this phone. And then we conduct a warrantless off-site forensic analysis of it 30 days later. Again, that balancing test. And here, the court said, forensic analysis was upheld. Why? Because there was reasonable suspicion. The reasonable suspicion determination is made based on the totality of the circumstances of each case. All right? So articulate. Tell me all the factors that you took into consideration in determining that there was a moderate chance this person was about to be engaged in criminal activity, right? Your case on point there for totality of the circumstances, United States versus Arvizu, right? And I'll tell you guys, this is a great case. If you guys have time, go on, check this bad boy out. Why? Because the Border Patrol officer in here, right? He did a great job, just fantastic articulation. And basically what happened is, one of their sensors went off in an area known for narcotics trafficking, right? And so the officer went out to that area and he saw a vehicle traveling through the area. No other vehicle traffic in the area. He did not recognize the vehicle, and the agent actually testified that he was very familiar with the vehicles that drove through this area. Okay? It was not a four-wheel drive. You got stop hating on my damn AI pictures, all right? My gosh, do you know how much time and effort it put into this? You know, the Border Patrol agent's on top of the car, the kids are in the desert. I'm regenerate 30 times. That's what happens when he's waving, right? Look, how many fingers do I have, right? Everybody's a freaking, everybody's got something to say, man. Everybody's got something to say, okay? Who was that? That was the Pennsylvania trooper? Everybody's got something to say. Is it in the original dispensary packaging? No? Well, then you're... All right. Yeah, kid. Yeah. All right. So the kid's got like 12 fingers because he's doing this. There you go. All right. Where was I? Now you guys got me all off track. I don't even know what the hell I was saying. So the agent goes out there and he sees this vehicle. It's not a four-wheel drive vehicle and it's driving through the area. The driver drives past him and looks straight ahead, right? No eye contact. And so he thinks that's kind of weird. And is that unusual? Yeah. Usually people are like, rubbernecking when a cop drives by, right? Dude's at 10 and 2. So the officer turns around, gets behind him, starts following the vehicle. The vehicle signals to turn onto a road that this agent is familiar with. And that road that the guy signals to turn onto is a 4x4 only road. Okay. And so he signals to turn, then he takes it off. Then he signals again and then rapidly turns. The agent makes the turn also. And the kids in the back seat, the agent notices their legs are up, like near their ears, right? As if there's something significant on the ground underneath their feet. The kids look at the officer and begin waving. And they begin waving mechanically, like they're waving for like 8 minutes straight. And the agent said, it was almost as if someone in the car told them, wave at the officer and don't stop waving. And I'll tell you guys, right? Guess what? The Ninth Circuit said this was not reasonable suspicion. Why? Because they approached it with this divide and conquer analysis where they say there's innocent explanations for all of these factors that you articulated very well. Then the United States Supreme Court came out and said, naughty, naughty, Ninth Circuit, that is not true. It is not a divide and conquer analysis. It is totality of the circumstances. And based on the totality of the circumstances here, this officer absolutely had reasonable suspicion. In making a reasonable suspicion determination, reviewing courts must look at the totality of the circumstances of each case to see whether the detaining officer has a particularized and objective basis for suspecting legal wrongdoing. This process allows officers to draw on their own experiences and specialized training to make inferences from and deductions about the cumulative information available. So, what did the agent articulate here? The sensor was triggered at shift change. But again, so what, right? So what? So it was scheduled at shift change. The agent articulated. Drug traffickers who put a lot of time and effort into this know when shift change is, and so they try to make runs at shift change time, hoping they will break through, between the shifts and therefore further avoid detection. There were no other vehicles in the area. The type of vehicles smugglers were known to use, it was a non-four-wheel drive minivan. The driver appeared stiff with a rigid posture. He avoided eye contact by looking straight ahead. The knees of the children in the back seat were high, as if their feet were resting on something. Children began to wave at the agent simultaneously in an abnormal pattern, as if they were being instructed. Children continued waving for about 4 minutes. All right, I want you guys, right? And so I'd say everybody in the courtroom, wave, put your hand up. All right, and go. 4 minutes. No, keep waving. Keep waving. Keep waving. Signal to turn, then turn the signal off, then signaled abruptly before quickly turning. The vehicle turned at the last road before checkpoint onto a 4x4 road. Agent had never seen the vehicle in the area before. And the vehicle registration returned to an area known for alien and narcotics smuggling. I love it, guys. Totality of the circumstances. Tell me why. Articulate, articulate, articulate. The Border Patrol agent did it here in spades, and the United States Supreme Court upheld his actions as reasonable. There you go. There it is. Tell me why. Without reasonable suspicion, border agents drilled a hole into a tractor trailer's frame and observed a white substance. Okay. Hold up a second, guys, here. Reasonable suspicion is not a hard standard to meet, right? It's a moderate chance. It's specific articulable facts. These Border Patrol agents are telling me I can't articulate a moderate chance of criminal activity, and yet I pulled out the DeWalt and started drilling into this dude's frame. And look, we found coke, right? Is this a circumstance where there was reasonable suspicion and these officers just failed to articulate it? It's certainly possible, right? Don't be that officer. Don't be that officer. This was not a routine border search, and therefore the evidence was suppressed. Strip searches. Reasonable suspicion allows a person suspected of being a balloon swallower to be detained for consent to an X-ray or for a court-authorized rectal exam. Right? Who's pulling that duty? Put the new guy in, right? Agents had reasonable suspicion that a woman claiming to be there on business was concealing narcotics in her rectum. She refused an X-ray, and a court-authorized exam discovered 88 balloons, 528 grams of cocaine. Man, right? For those of you guys who have seen the show Shameless, we call this El Gran Canyon. Translated, the Grand Canyon. So we have reasonable suspicion. She claims there to be there on business. What business that is? Trafficking narcotics. Business is good. She refused an X-ray, and so we go to the judge, and judge says, "Ominous Dominus, go forth and conquer, my son. Be brave." We find a whole lot of cocaine. This was reasonable under the border search exception. Reasonable suspicion allows a more intrusive border search, such as strip searches. There it is, guys. Airport and border searches. Did you guys find this information useful? I hope you did. I hope you did. That's why we do what we do. That's why we're here tonight, is to bring you guys valuable information that you can apply in the real world. If you guys would, please scan this QR code, leave us a review. If you feel like this blue to gold training information is valuable, nothing helps us get the word out to other law enforcement officers like peer reviews. Anybody who goes on Amazon knows if this bad boy's got 3 reviews, even if it's 5 stars, and it sounds like everybody's using it, you know, like English might not be their first language. I ain't buying that thing. I ain't buying that thing. So what do I need? I need a review. Give me a review. Let's get this word out to law enforcement, and let's help more law enforcement officers make good case law. All right? All right. Now, don't go anywhere. Why? Because we got the search and seizure show coming right up.